Hi, everybody. This is, once again, Eve Harrow, and you're listening to Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. It is right in between that crazy time period that we have now of Holocaust Memorial Day, Holocaust and Heroes Memorial Day, followed a week later by Israel's Memorial Day for our fallen soldiers, or people who were killed in wars, and terror victims, which is in itself immediately followed, we're talking like by 1 minute, with our Independence Day. It's a real roller coaster time here in Israel. On Memorial Day for the Holocaust, there's a siren in the morning when everybody stands and, like, you know, just thinks about the more than 6 million that were killed in Europe. And it's an interesting, you know, I was thinking this year, because this year I was actually at Atlit. I was, I'm in the middle of guiding a group of high school students. That's my other job, of course, when I'm not behind this mic, is tour guide. Although in Hebrew, it's so much better in Hebrew. It's mora derech, really a teacher on the way. And you know, that's what we are. We're educators. And so when I'm guiding all the time, but when I'm guiding, especially during this week, and I know that I'm trying to get people who don't live here to understand how Israelis feel, how intense this week is. So, you know, I have to think about it myself. Not that I wouldn't think about it myself anyway, but you have to think about it in such a way that you can translate feelings into words, which is, as we all know, sometimes like really hard to do. It's not just about facts this week. You know, we can talk about, as I did in Atlit, we could talk about the detention camp that the British set up here in the Land of Israel, how they prevented Jews from escaping from the Nazis. They had gotten the mandate, the British mandate for Palestine, that they were given by the League of Nations after World War I. They were given an order to set up a homeland for the Jews here, and reneged. You know, the white papers, and they wanted their oil. Didn't want to deal with the Arabs. They reneged, and as a result, many, many, many Jews died. So, did the British kill the Jews? Absolutely not. But by not opening the gates, and by not allowing the Jews fleeing the Nazis a place to come to and a place to be safe, a lot of Jews died. So what would you call that? What would you call that? An accessory? Oh, that's a harsh term. But then I think about a lot of us in the world right now, because I'm always relating what's happened in the past and the history to things that are happening now, because if we don't learn from what we've done and the mistakes that we've done and other people have done and the right things, the correct things that we've done, then how are we going to fix things for the future? So I think about that. I think about that in terms of today, you know, in terms of Israel, in terms of other countries in the world. You know, are there really friends? Are there countries that are really, really, really friends, or just countries that have mutual interests? So the debate that was going on in the Land of Israel during World War II was a debate that had a lot to do with the British, because on the one hand, the British were fighting the Nazis. The British were part of the Allies. They're fighting the Nazis in Europe, not to save the Jews. And Winston Churchill made that really clear. And anything that the Jews were doing to, you know, try and help the British, in the main, had to be done quietly. I was just talking to my friend Carolyn Glick last week, and she told me about a book that she had read, that Rommel was stopped in North Africa, which was huge. The German general Rommel was stopped in North Africa by the British, and that's why the Jews of the Land of Israel didn't go into the death camps, because the Nazis didn't make it here, at least en masse and as an army, and that there were Jews who helped the British in North Africa, and there were Jews that were helping the British everywhere, really, to fight the Nazis, and in general, not getting the credit and being told this is not going to be publicized, because we don't want anyone to think that we're fighting the war to save the Jews. But the fact that the Allies did get into the war, it meant that the war ended without the German victory, and of course without not all the Jews of Europe being killed. So, you know, ultimately it's a good thing, even if the intent wasn't there. But I think about it in terms of today, you know, that there are countries that ally themselves with Israel, that are friends with Israel, but can we really rely at some point when our interests and the interests of those countries diverge? So then what happens? And that's why we need to really rely on ourselves and stay strong. That's a lesson that's burnt into the brain of, I think, every Jew, that we know what happened 70 years ago and we couldn't protect ourselves, and we don't want that to happen again. So just a week after Holocaust Memorial Day, and it's also called, it's interesting, it's also called Memorial Day and Yomasha v'gvura, like, and bravery, because there was bravery. Not everybody, just walked into the showers and with Zyklon B. There was a lot of bravery on the side of Jews and of non-Jews in Europe during those terrible years of World War II, and that needs to be recognized as well. But it's also a comment on how Israel faced the Holocaust in the 1950s when this Memorial Day was established, and we're trying to build a new Jew here. The people that, came and started the state in 1948 officially, but of course many, many decades before, there's already Jews reestablishing and replanting and coming in from all over the world to our ancient homeland. And, that the idea of the Holocaust was like, well, we're not that kind of Jew anymore. Those were weak Jews. Those were Jews who didn't protect themselves. And so we're going to build a new Jew here. And that was kind of a myth. It was more than kind of a myth, because there's still a lot of pain, and there's still definitely elements of powerlessness even within sovereignty. But it shows a lot about how Israel grappled with the idea of the Holocaust, not just the idea of the Holocaust, but the survivors of the Holocaust during the 1950s, who really didn't speak about their experiences until the early 60s and the Eichmann trial, the Nazi who was brought to Israel from South America and stood trial, the only person that Israel has ever put to death for the crimes that he committed against humanity and, of course, against the Jewish people. And that's really when the floodgates opened and people started talking about the Holocaust, because up until then, for a lot of reasons, they didn't want to talk about it. Either they couldn't talk about it, nobody would have believed them, they had done things during the Holocaust that they wouldn't want people to know, a lot of things like that. But what's interesting to commemorate Holocaust now is that every year there are fewer and fewer survivors. Every year there are fewer people who actually were part of that. And as the years go on, of course, eventually there won't be anybody who lived through it. And therefore, the responsibility on those of us who know survivors, who've heard the stories, who've been to the camps, is going to be all that much greater, because the day is going to recede into a historical day where there aren't actually people who lived through it. Like on the ninth day of Av, when we fast for the destruction of both our temples and inquisitions and other terrible things that have happened to our people. There's no one alive who actually, saw the second temple be burnt. Yet it becomes part of our historical memory. And pretty soon, Holocaust Memorial Day is also, it's going to recede into the past in that level. But we really, really, it behooves all of us to make sure that we're educated about it, and that we feel and that we understand how quickly something, the world could slide into that again. And this is as opposed to Memorial Day for our soldiers and for terror victims, where it's not only not going to recede, but it's in some degrees quite raw and quite open, and that not that there are fewer people every year. Unfortunately, there are more people to put on the list every single year, and more families and more survivors of terror or of wars who feel for that. It's a very, very open wound and grief here in Israel. And it's different. It's a week later and it's different. And it's also, it's pain and it's grief, but coming from as Israelis and not as, Jews living in a foreign country and, being killed by a war machine like that. You could say it's the same ultimately, right? Dead's dead. But it isn't. It isn't. And here in Israel, you feel that it isn't. We also have sirens during that day. We will have sirens both at night and in the morning. And all stores are closed and there's no music that's played. Like, you really feel like a sense of mourning in the country. But immediately when the sun sets on Memorial Day, which is this coming Wednesday, we go right into Independence Day. It's this crazy 48 hours that never fails, no matter how many years I've lived here, to really jolt. Like, and you appreciate so much the independence, because we've just come out of the price that we paid. A lot of people now in the world get things on credit. You take the dress home, you take the TV home, and you only pay for it the next month. when it comes to Israel and when it comes to the freedom of the Jews, to be free in our homeland, we pay up front. And during this coming week, you know, first we grieve and we see the price that we've paid, and it makes the independence and it makes the joy that much greater. But, you know, Memorial Day in Israel is not a day of shoe sales. It's a serious day. It's a living day. It's still a continuing day. And so, you know, this week, this 8 days being here is so very intense. And it just happens that this week, because I'm guiding this high school, so I'm up north, I'm up in the Galilee. And of course, the Galilee is just like so full of history. I'm here staying at Kibbutz Levi, which is a kibbutz that was established by some of the children of the Kinder Transport, the children who were evacuated, who were saved from the Nazis and were sent without their parents, and most of them ended up being orphaned, were sent to England, the same England that on the one hand fights the Nazis, but on the other hand, as I started saying at the beginning, here in the land of Israel isn't letting the people in. So, you know, but they took these children in, which was amazing. And of course, a lot of these children then afterwards come to the newborn state of Israel. And even before this, even before the state was born, set up a kibbutz here. And Yehuda Avner, the famous the man who was so much to so many prime ministers, and that's one of the books that he wrote, was Prime Ministers, who just passed away a few months ago. He was one of the founders of this kibbutz. So I'm here in this kibbutz up in the Galilee and not far from Nazareth, very, very close to Tzipori, where the Mishnah was redacted. And I'm thinking about why the Mishnah was redacted, why the Mishnah was written down, the oral law that was, you know, we had the written law, the Torah, and then we had the oral law that like came with it, that was flexible and that, you know, could that could be interpreted and changed during the generations and passed from father to son and from, you know, from rabbi to student. And eventually it had to be written down in the year 200 here at Tzipori by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi for a very, very practical reason. The rabbis who knew the laws were being murdered by the Romans. So it wasn't, the Nazis didn't invent this idea of killing the Jews. That was a long, long time ago. That was 2,000 years ago by the Romans, who tried to kill us also physically. They destroyed the temple in the year 70. 60 years later, when there's another revolt against the Romans, the Bar Kokhba revolt, where the famous Rabbi Akiva is like his spiritual mentor. And a lot of that happens up here, and the Romans crush that revolt, kill half the Jews living in the land of Israel. Jews are forced out of Jerusalem and Judea. The place is renamed. Jerusalem is renamed Deila Capitolina. Judea is renamed Palestine. Oh, does that not sound familiar? Because if you can change the names, then maybe, just maybe, you can get the Jews to forget the attachment. But it doesn't work. We don't forget the attachment. So for hundreds of years, the Jews are not living in Judea and Jerusalem. They're living up here in the Galilee. And that's why the Mishnah is redacted here. And later on, the Talmud, the commentary on the Mishnah, also in Tiberias, the Jerusalem Talmud is written down 200 years later. And that's really where life is here. And again, we're not free. We're under the Romans, but still managing to keep going, to you know, circumcise our sons, to learn Torah, to keep Shabbat, to keep family, to keep our love of God, to keep our faith in God. And that's happened ever since. And then eventually we leave the land of Israel, the Muslim conquest, and the roads aren't safe. And there's a big earthquake in 749. So there's some natural disasters and there's some man-made disasters. And you know, there's some famines and there's some droughts. And eventually the Jews end up really in Europe for a millennia. And that ends. That ends in the 1940s to a great degree, of course, with the Holocaust and that whole world, that whole shtetl world, the world of Torah learning, the world of Judaism there, pretty much, you know, ends, as we said. And that's what we commemorate. So there's just so many things here. And one of the things that I find living here in Israel and being so privileged to also be able to take people around Israel and try and explain is how it's all together, the history, the past, the present, the religious aspects, the aspects of the land, to look at the seven fruits, the seven species that are blooming all over here. We're in the time of the Omer, the very special time period of the year between Passover and Shavuot, between the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and watching the little persimmons, the little palm, I like persimmons too, but they're not one of the seven species. The little pomegranates just starting, the little baby pomegranates that will, you know, be in full force, be all out there to be eaten at the end of the summer, and the little tiny figs, and the little grapes on the vines, and to appreciate the connection between the land and the people and God, because now it's not going to be raining, and now we're going to have 6 months of a dry season, and now we're going to be harvesting what grew during the rainy season. And I think about the Pharisees, I think about the Prushim, who were farmers. The Galileans were tough. The Galileans were tough people. They were simple people. They were farmers. But when you're a farmer, you have this tremendous connection to God, because you understand that nature, meaning God's hand in the world, right, whether it's going to rain or not rain, whether locusts are going to come, whether there'll be blight, all those things, it's all that, it's that connection with God. We're not in Egypt anymore. We left Egypt. That was Passover. We don't have the Nile. We have a very, very different connection to God physically here in the land of Israel. You feel it. You feel it physically. You feel it in the things that are blooming. You go around and look at some of the Galilee is about 50% Muslim Arabs and about 50% Jewish. But the names of the towns, the traditionally Arab towns up here, are over 90% of them are names of cities where the Jews once lived. And how do we know that? Because we can look into that very Mishnah and we can see the quotes of certain rabbis, Rabbi so-and-so from somewhere. And that somewhere is here. So at some time, that village was a Jewish village. Of course, it changes over the years when the Jews are forced out or forced to convert to Islam or killed or whatever it is. But we're back. And ultimately, that's what I keep thinking about. Now, I learn the history and I learn the layers and the tragedies and the victories. And what this week symbolizes is we're back. We're back. We're not going anywhere. And yes, we're going to take blows. And I don't think there are any Israelis that are naive enough to think that, you know, everything's going to be good right now. We still have enemies within. We still have enemies without. But the positive feeling here, the optimism, the families, we're right after the Holocaust. People are coming. People are having children. Not such an easy decision to make, to love again, to attach yourself to people, to make yourself vulnerable to loss after what you've been through. But we have that here in Israel now, a family, a society that's based on children, that's based on family. You go around and that's what you see here, children, 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 families. The highest birth rate here in the Western world, because we're happy and because we love our future and we love our children and we love our God and we love our land and we love our people. So with all that people have tried to bring us down from all over the place, we just won't do it. We're going to keep smiling. We're going to keep praying, sometimes through our tears. Sometimes through our tears, but ultimately the gift that we were given of the Torah, the gift that we were given of the land, the gift that we were given and that we keep getting of life, of future, of knowing that this world is not a perfect place. This is not a perfect country. None of us are perfect. The world is far from perfect. But each one of us as individuals and as a Jew, I feel as a nation, are really mandated to get that A for effort, to do the best we can in a very murky time. Not that any time really hasn't been murky, to show like the moral way, to show that, you know, things can be done, that you're not beaten down. You're not beaten down. It doesn't matter who's coming after you. If you get up in the morning, and what we say as Jews, you know, we say what's called the Modani. The first thing you're supposed to say when you get up in the morning is, thank you, God, for giving me my breath back, for giving me my soul back. And if you say that first thing in the morning, when you have that appreciation for, and don't take anything for granted, just for waking up and breathing again, that kind of sets the tone for your whole day. And that's what this week is about. This week is about the loss. This week is about the grief. But ultimately, it's about tremendous appreciation then for what we have. If you haven't, unfortunately, if you haven't suffered or you haven't had to pay a price, you don't appreciate what you have. It's only when you're sick that you realize when you're healthy. And so we've got that in this like just small time period here in Israel. Just like so many things about Israel are just so intense. You know, like no gray. It's like, whoa, right in there, right in there all together. I couldn't be any place else. And if you're out there and you're listening and you haven't been here recently, get yourselves over here, not just now, not just during this time period to feel it, but at any time, to come here, to see the hope, to see the optimism, to see the fruit blooming on the trees, because that fruit is a sign of God's love and God's promise, because the land of Israel will bloom for her children again, and she's doing it. So you don't have to like be this tremendous scholar or ivory tower or look for all these like fancy things. You just have to come here sometimes and look at the fruit blooming on the trees to feel the love, to feel the hope, to feel the future. And then when you look at the farmer who planted it and you look around at his neighbors and the country and the society that we're building, then you could feel God in ways that you just can't feel him anywhere else. So thanks for listening. I just want to end with my love and my grief for my people and the losses that we've all had, the tears that we shed this week, and also for the tremendous joy that we share in knowing that despite the losses, despite the sacrifices, they're not for nothing. They're not for nothing. Because Am Yisrael Chai, the people of Israel live. And this week is like that kind of, you know, juxtaposition of all of those things together. So Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. Write to me, give me some feedback, eve@thelandofisrael.com. And take care, everybody. And goodbye for now.